Welcome to Manners and Madness, a Jane Austen and David Lynch podcast. My name is Maya Atkins.
And I'm Christian Cabrera. And today we are covering the movie Clue.
Oh, we're starting our Tim Curry leg of the podcast.
Yes.
We've threatened you with a good time for long enough.
Exactly. It's always a good time with a Tim Curry movie, if you ask me.
I agree. I mean, he definitely brings the good time to whatever he's in.
Yeah, he has this like special like sense of joy that even if like his characters are evil, I'm like, I'm having such an amazing time. I don't care if they're evil, and I don't want the evil character to go away.
Maybe more so when they're evil, honestly.
Exactly. He's so great. Especially in this movie. This is probably one of my favorite Tim Curry movies.
I know. I was watching it and thinking, in a cast of a lot of really great actors and actresses, Tim Curry kind of shines above everyone. That is impressive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is like a... you know, capital C cast, especially for that time period. This is like a heavy hitter. And yeah, he just like really stands out. And he's definitely like every time I watch this movie, I try and like follow a different character to be like, let me see what jokes I'm missing or see like maybe if this is my new favorite character. But I always end up following this new character and Wadsworth, who he plays, because he's just always so funny. He's just so good.
Well, what was your first time watching it? What was your first impression?
I watched it for the first time, I would say probably like 3 or 4 years ago. It was a movie I knew about, but it was mostly people like that I went to high school with who were really into movies from the 80s. I had this one friend who was really into 80s movies, and I never watched it with her for some reason, but... you know, Josh really loves this movie, so we watched it, and I was, like, instantly fell in love with it. It's so funny. It's, to me, very reminiscent of, it seems to maybe have inspired, like shows like 30 Rock and those kind of things where it's, like, joke, 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 and it kind of feels almost relentless, which I like, and a lot of stupidity.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking this time, it's definitely a farce, which I don't know if you've seen... a lot of like theatrical farces before, but it's kind of a distinct style that has to do with a lot of like going in and out of rooms and opening doors and, you know, things keep moving and it's just silliness. And I mean, I didn't look it up to see if any scholars agree with me, but I was like, this is a farce. This is 100% a farce. Just like the setup of the house and everything makes it feel like a farce.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, just the, I think it's just such a genius thing to have like a board game and be like, we're going to make a movie, but it's going to be one of the dumbest, funniest movies ever. And then everyone's just going to be an idiot in it. And I love a movie where everyone is like useless.
I did look up, because I was like, I don't know what got into my head, but I was like, are all board game movies amazing? Because I don't know what other movie I was thinking of, because I was like, Jumanji, even though it's not, I don't think that's based on a real game. It's just based on,
but it's like
they might have made a game after the fact.
Right.
And I guess I did look up a list and it said technically Dungeons and Dragons is considered a board game. And I thought that movie was really good. And it also had Labyrinth on the list. And I was like, okay, you're really stretching the board game.
I was like, if there's a Labyrinth board game, I want to buy it.
No, there's not a Labyrinth board game, but there are mazes.
Well, darn.
You know, and then there are other things like game night and stuff, but I don't really think that counts as a movie based on a board game. So I guess I was just jumping to conclusions when I was like, all board game movies are amazing.
Well, maybe this just means that there should be more board game movies and they should just be, you know,
an untapped market.
Just as silly.
Let's not make a Monopoly movie, though, because that is a torturous game to play, and I think it might be a torturous movie to watch.
I don't think it would be fun just because it feels like we're living Monopoly, where we're actually probably just stuck in jail or just landing all the spaces we didn't buy.
Or they could make a movie that's based on, you know, how like Monopoly was originally a different game and you flipped it over and Monopoly was like the bad version of the game. I can't remember. And then the Parker Brothers stole it and all this stuff. But yeah, they could make a movie based on that, I guess. That might be interesting. Oh.
I'm sure, honestly, I would be shocked if there isn't like a script, you know, floating around.
And maybe like, I would on like that to see blacklist. Like a high concept Candyland movie.
Oh, that would be great, actually. You could totally do like a Candyland, like Wizard of Oz style. Yes. That would be really fun.
I was getting it mixed up with Chutes and Ladders in my head, and then I was like, wait a minute. No, you don't have to slide down slides in Candyland.
I always preferred Candyland because it always felt like Chutes and Ladders was the quickest board game ever. I feel like I would be like, well, it's been 5 minutes and we're done.
Or the most frustrating when you're like, I'm two yes. squares away. Oh my God, I'm back in the beginning.
No more shoots.
That's why it's good to play with little kids because they have just as good a chance as you of winning.
Exactly. Well, do you remember the first time you ever watched this movie?
I don't know that I remember. I was saying to you before we started that I feel like I've seen this movie a million times because we used to quote it a lot in high school. Mm-hmm. But then watching it again, I was like, I think we quoted it because other people watched it a lot and knew it. And because I've definitely seen it plenty of times, I'm sure. But it was just wasn't one of those movies that like was cemented in my brain or anything. Right. So I was like, it was like watching it anew, but with some quotes that I remember.
That to me is like, I think every generation has that movie, and for my generation it was Step Brothers. Everyone quoted it relentlessly, and I didn't watch it for a few years but knew all the quotes and somehow was still in on the jokes, like even though I never watched the movie.
Yeah, well, the one thing I will say about this movie and its board game aspect is I definitely played Clue a lot, and this movie definitely is the game, you know?
Yeah.
It's got all the aspects of the game, and I really like that about it.
Me too. It makes it more fun, and it makes it almost feel like you're in on it, like you're playing the game almost, and you're trying to figure And it was really good at, like, concealing who did what and, you know, who the murderer is, blah, blah, blah. I feel like it did a great job. It makes it fun.
Definitely. I feel like you could watch it over and over and kind of like, well, you said you like to follow the different characters, but you could do that and be like, were they in this room at this time?
Yeah. Yeah. I always do that too, where I'm like at the end where everything is revealed, I'm like, I've got to follow like these certain characters to see it like play out in real life and or real time. And I never do. I always forget.
Clue was one of those few games that I actually really did like playing. I was kind of like I don't know. I think maybe I was overly competitive as a child. So I didn't really enjoy playing most games. And I don't know if it was that I was overly competitive or I just didn't like to play with people who, or maybe I'm just a stickler for the rules. And I felt like people were always trying to cheat in every game. Anyway, I kind of like stepped back from playing games for a while, but I did like to play Clue because
it's a fun,
it's not the same kind of a game really.
Yeah. I love board games, and I do really love Clue, but I'm also very, like, competitive, and I don't like cheaters.
Agreed.
Like, especially, like, it's weird because I'm a very anti-capitalist person, but I do enjoy playing Monopoly, and I don't like when people hide the money. It's rude.
Oh my god, Monopoly was definitely ruined for me.
Yeah, well, I guess they're being true capitalist Monopoly players if they are hiding the money, so whatever.
I had some friends in college who played Monopoly games that would last for days, and I was like, why? Oh, why is it? It's not worth it.
No, that's too much.
Well, but we're not talking about Monopoly, we're talking about Clue.
We're talking about Clue. Get a clue. Should we get into some notes?
You know what? Let's talk about one more thing first.
Yes.
Do you remember your first Tim Curry movie or, you know,
oh gosh,
experience?
I feel like It's not this movie. I feel like it would have to be a kid's movie. Let me see. Do you remember yours?
I'm pretty sure my first would have been Annie.
Ah.
And I'm excited to watch that for our Tim Curry collection someday.
Me too.
Because it's been so long since I've seen it, and it was definitely one of my favorite movies. And my sister was telling me that she rewatched it the other day, and that Tim Curry is amazing in it.
I mean, it's Tim Curry.
Well, I mean, it's got Carol Burnett, Tim Curry, Bernadette Peters as like the trio of bad guys or whatever.
That's so great.
I know. What a great... It's been so long.
Well, so I'm going through his IMDb just to kind of see like what was the first thing. He's done a lot of voiceover for cartoons I watched growing up. So I definitely heard his voice all the time.
Yeah.
But I feel like the first time I ever saw him was was probably of Will and Grace.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is a weird one. But I used to watch that with my mom a lot. Like, because she would work nights at the hospital. She was a nurse. And when she would come home in the mornings during the summer, she would kind of, sometimes she would pick up breakfast on the way home. And I would be like the only kid awake at the time, and would, you know, we would get into bed and she would like turn on the TV and we would watch a couple things. But one of the things was always Will and Grace. And, you know, he was on an episode as just like a, you know, I think a one episode role, but it was very silly, very ridiculous. But yeah, I think that's the first thing I ever saw him in. But he was in countless cartoons that I watched. I think most notably The Wild Thornberrys, which is one of my favorite cartoons. He played the dad, Nigel Thornberry, who had a very crazy British accent, you know, very explorer, and it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to say our plan for the Tim Curry is just to stick him in whenever, but we're not really planning on doing his series, especially, you know,
more movies.
Especially his animated series. Just, you know, we're going to throw in some Tim Curry movies because we love him and we think he's great.
Exactly. I feel like he could definitely float between the David Lynch and Jane Austen worlds.
I could see him easily. In either.
Exactly.
Or if there was truly a mashup, he would be number one on the call list.
Exactly. If we have anything to say about it.
Well, should we go ahead and get to the notes then?
Let's do it. So, it was released December 13th, 1985, and it was directed by Jonathan Lynn, and it was written by John Landis and Jonathan Lynn.
I think we just... Oh, Three Amigos was John Landis.
Yes, I think so. He's, you know, he's one of those, you know, did the Blues Brothers. He did a lot of stuff.
Oh, he's done a ton.
Yeah.
I always feel slightly conflicted about him, but I can't help, but I love a lot of his movies.
I know. Well, yeah, you know, I feel like that's a lot of things from the 80s. You're like, I'm so conflicted. I love it. It has a special place in my heart, but.
Yeah, just, you know, well, we won't get into John Landis.
Yeah.
Save that for a different podcast.
Exactly. All right, but let me go through this amazing cast list. All right, so we have Eileen Brennan as Mrs. Peacock.
She was great.
Oh,
I feel
she
like
was
she's
amazing.
Someone I just kind of never really looked at too hard, but then I was watching it this time and I was like, she's gorgeous. They put her in all,
yeah.
She's got to be like so much younger than they're trying to play her as too.
Oh, yeah. But she just does such a great job of being so like, you know, like that bumbling kind of like,
yeah,
she's but immediately caught. Yeah, she's so great. She's so funny. And speaking of the names, I thought they did a great job of bringing like the names of the characters, being like, these are your code names.
Yeah,
I thought that was a great idea. Okay, and then we have Tim Curry as Wadsworth, Madeline Kahn as Mrs. White, who is obviously amazing.
Obviously.
Obviously, she's amazing at everything. Christopher Lloyd as Professor Plum.
Such a creepist.
I know. Michael McKean as Mr. Green.
Great.
Martin Mull as Colonel Mustard. I love Martin Mull. My first exposure to him was on the TV show Roseanne. He's just
fool. He's also great. I mean, everybody is so good in this movie.
Oh yeah. Leslie Ann Warren is Miss Scarlet, who was the person I followed this time.
Oh, well, good, because
yeah, turns she's out
the first potential killer.
Exactly. Colleen Camp as Yvette, the maid. Lee Ving as
Her accent Ms. did drive Gabbati. Me a little crazy, but other than that.
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be just like this over the top, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're like, oh, she's definitely not from France. Lee Ving as Mr. Body. Bill Henderson as the cop.
I did look up Lee Ving because I was like, who is this guy? In this whole cast, I've never heard of this guy, but he's like a musician. I think he does music for movies sometimes.
Oh yeah, and he was a writer, I think, for some of the Bill and Ted's
yeah, the music. Yeah,
yeah, he's kind of like an definitely like an 80s mainstay. Jane Wheedlin as the singing telegram girl.
I am your singing telegram.
Blam. Jeffrey Kramer as the motorist. Mm-hmm. Kelly Nakahara as Mrs. Ho the cook.
Mrs. Ho.
Yes. And Howard Hessman as the chief.
Yes, yes.
So very, very good cast. Very, you know, you see the cast list and you know you're in for a good time and a lot of tomfoolery.
Uh-huh.
And then this is like one of those movies, because it's like a cult classic, there are so many like trivia things that it's definitely worth taking a look at, because there's just so many things.
Cool.
But I say, let's just get into that recap, because it's
let's do it.
A lot to figure out. We open with some, you know, intro credits. Very 80s, and we see a car pulling up to this big, scary mansion in this, like, huge thunderstorm.
The intro credits, weren't they just, like, white text on a black screen? I was like, this is the most boring. This is, like,
yes.
So early plain. David Lynch intro credits.
Oh, yeah. It's very plain. Nothing special. But there's, like, a raging thunderstorm. Lots of lightning and thunder.
I kind of got Rocky Horror Picture Show vibes.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. And, you know, it doesn't help that Tim Curry steps out of the car. And there's these two, like, vicious barking dogs, and he reaches into his paper bag and pulls out what looks like two legs of lamb and throws it at them. And then here begins the recurring bit of the dog poop on the shoe. Because he steps in some and then just rubs his foot on some sort of little metal thing outside the front door. But he goes in, he checks in with the house staff, which is the cook and the maid. And then the doorbell rings. And our first guest is Colonel Mustard. And then shortly after him is Mrs. White. And then this, and when both of them enter, we get this, the continuation of the dog poop joke, because we just hear them sniffing.
Uh-huh.
And they start looking around like, where is that coming from?
Yeah, at first I was like, did they also step in it? But then I was like, no, they're just smelling Tim Curry.
Yeah, it's still on his shoes. But we see the maid also is there when Mrs. White arrives, and they kind of exchange some interesting glances. Clearly they know each other.
Yeah, there's a lot of glancing going on.
Uh-huh, very suspicious. But then our next scene, we go and we see that there is a broken down car and a woman who is trying to figure out what's going on. And then we see some headlights in the distance. So she decides she's going to make them pull over. She's going to stick her butt out. She's going to like fix her hair up and play the damsel in distress. And of course, they stop.
She definitely uses her womanly wiles throughout the movie.
Exactly. And he decides to give her a lift. But turns out they're going to the same place, the mansion. Next person to arrive at the mansion is Mrs. Peacock. She's kind of an older lady, very over the top, little like peacock head hat thingy.
She has like fur on, doesn't she?
Yes, she has like a stole and like these crazy big, like, what are they called? Cat eye glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Very ridiculous. And then next person to arrive is Mr. Green, who is kind of like this, he's definitely like the quintessential like bumbling fool of the cast, because there's this whole bit of the dogs going crazy and Wadsworth yells at them to sit, and Mr. Green sits on the bench like all of a sudden like he's in trouble, and he's like, not you.
Yeah, he's kind of like the most guileless, like the least suspicious of everyone.
Yeah, he's like so like innocent looking and just like, oh, there's no way he could do anything nefarious, he's just too dumb. And then the next two to arrive, who were the woman on the side of the road and the guy who picked her up, are Professor Plum and Miss Scarlet. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they arrive and they're settled, the dinner gong is rung. Which is just the cook going up and smashing the hammer on the gong as loud as she can.
Yeah, that's like my dad when he makes dinner. He has to ring the bell. I'm like, we're all standing right now.
It's the, you know, it's the tradition of calling everyone to dinner.
Yes.
So everyone files into the dining room. They're served their like soup / noodly dish. And they're, this is White and is it Mr. Green or no? No, Professor Plum, excuse me, are both slurping very loudly. And they're the only ones eating. And everyone's looking at them.
Is that what we later find out is monkey brains?
Yes. And we find that out because Mrs. Peacock says that she is a host by nature of her husband's career, and that she is a great, she goes on and is kind of bumbling on about being a great host and this is what you do to be a great host, but it doesn't seem like great host activities. But she starts to divulge a little bit about herself and basically says like, well, we all have to figure out why we're here, so why not kind of figure out who each other is? And we find out that she is married to a politician. Mr. Green works in Washington as well. Professor Plum is a doctor. Colonel Mustard is an actual colonel. And Mrs. Scarlet knows Colonel Mustard. And they all live in D.C. Or they all, and well, like all of them except for Professor Plum live in D.C., but they all work somewhat for the government.
Right.
Because Professor Plum works for, well, not I almost said UNICEF. It's like United Nations.
Uh-huh.
So then there's all this talk about this mysterious seventh guest who's not there yet. But the doorbell rings and in arrives Mr. Body. And very, very menacing music. You know, he's very like, oh, he's nefarious. Like, he's the villain. You can tell.
Right. Except for he is just a red herring, as everything else in this movie is.
Just like communism. Which is probably like one of my favorite running jokes in this movie. But Wadsworth has an envelope that he has to... Oh, wait. So before that happens, sorry. They find out that the letter told them that they had to come here because Mr. Body is going to reveal some sort of either like long-standing financial secrets or any sort of secrets that they have, basically that they're going to find out that they're going to be blackmailed.
Well, I thought they were all already being blackmailed.
Not yet. This is like where they find out, like, this is why you're called here, is because Mr. Body is blackmailing you because he has all these secrets. And then when we go to the study right after, that's where Wadsworth has like the envelope with all the evidence in it.
Right.
And it has like a note that says like, you know, Wadsworth, open after dinner. So very specific instructions. So when that happens, Mr. Body gets very tense and he says that they should all leave. But this is where we find out the doors are locked and the windows are barred. And he goes to, it looks like almost like a greenhouse attached to the house. And he tries to break the window with some glass. But then we find out there's some vicious dogs outside. You might as well not.
Yeah, this was very much the first, like, something is not as it seems here, because the person who purportedly called you all here is the first one trying to escape.
Exactly. So, like, something's going on. And Tim Curry is
chasing him around trying to stop him, and I'm like,
That's your first clue.
Yeah, Tim Curry is really the driving force of this entire movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love him. All right, so he stops him from breaking the window, and they return to the study. And this is where Wadsworth officially reveals, like, this is the evidence, and you're all being blackmailed. And we find out why. Professor Plum has actually lost his medical license. It was revoked for sort of inappropriate relations with a patient. Mrs. Peacock.
We know that he's a psychiatrist, though, right? Already?
Or yes. No? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's like a doctor of psychiatry. He's not like a medical doctor. Yeah, it was
like a young patient or something.
Yeah, it was very much like a creep.
Yeah.
We find out Mrs. Peacock is accepting bribes because her husband's in politics and can influence things.
Clarence Thomas's wife.
Uh-huh. That's exactly who I thought of. We find out Miss Scarlet sort of runs an escort service for DC politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Mustard.
She's the one who should be blackmailing everyone.
Exactly. And this is where we have the funny line where Colonel Mustard is like, you know, saying to Wadsworth, like, don't make me look stupid. And Wadsworth is like, I don't think you need help looking stupid. And it made me laugh. But we find out Mrs. White suspiciously lost her husband after he said he would publicly kill her. No, kill her. He said he would kill her publicly. And then we have the word play of being like, he said he would kill you in public. No, publicly, he said he would kill her.
Yeah, she's had several husbands. She's kind of a black widow.
Yes. This whole like section of hers is like so dense with jokes because her first husband, we find out, disappeared. And she says, well, he was an illusionist. And he never came back. And she said, well, he wasn't very good at being an illusionist.
Madeline Kahn is probably my number two in this movie.
Yes, she's just so good. And then here we have Mr. Green. He admits his secret. He is a homosexual, but he's concealing it for very obvious homophobia reasons.
Yeah, which also makes him seem the least suspicious because it's like, well, that's not doing anything bad.
Exactly. It's not like, you know, as much as everyone else's alleged blackmail. Yeah. And Mr. Body is the one blackmailing them all, which, you know, kind of doesn't add up considering he tried to escape. So,
exactly.
But we find out that the police are going to arrive in around 45 minutes and they can all tell them that they're being blackmailed and get out of being blackmailed. But before that happens, Mr. Body brings in a bag with presents for everyone. And as they're opening the presents, it's basically all the game board pieces. We've got the rope, Rich, candlestick. The pipe, the gun, and the knife. But Mr. Body tells them that if they tell the police that he will release the info, causing them humiliation. But if they kill Wadsworth, they can all just leave now. Mr. Body shuts off the light and we hear a gunshot, we hear glass breaking, a thud, and a scream. So once lights turn back on, Mr. Body is on the floor and he's not alive anymore.
According to Professor Plum.
Yeah, according to Professor Plum, who is no longer a doctor of psychiatry. But we have this funny little moment where they're trying to figure out how he died because he doesn't have a bullet hole, so he wasn't shot. But Mrs. Peacock starts drinking from the cognac that they were all served, and they were like, maybe it was the cognac. And she starts freaking out, and Mr. Green has to slap her to get her out of it. And it's very ridiculous.
I feel like this was the first time I was like, is Tim Curry not in this scene anymore?
Yes, it was very much like the chaos of the scene. Maybe that allowed his character to step out, possibly.
Yeah. Hmm. Although I don't even know if technically that is correct and what ended up being the end. So it doesn't really matter. But I did notice. I was like, I don't think he's in here.
But right after that, they hear screaming down the hall and they run to the billiards room. And Yvette, the maid, is screaming because she drank the cognac and she's scared. Because she was listening in to the conversation because it's all being recorded.
Yes.
But back in the study, they go and Wadsworth reveals that he was Mr. Body's butler. So they have a connection. And that he wrote the letters and came up with the plan to get everyone there. And we find out that Wadsworth working for Mr. Body ended when his wife committed suicide because she had friends who were socialists, which is also another gag part because everyone reacts very dramatically.
It's so 80s, like.
Yeah, so 80s.
We're concerned about communism. We're concerned about someone being gay.
And I love how this movie pokes fun at how ridiculous that is. Like the whole communism being a red herring the whole time.
Yeah. A red herring.
Exactly. But basically, they all decide they need to figure out who killed Mr. Body. And they decide to check on the cook first, because she's the only one not in the room with them. So they go to the kitchen, and it's empty. And they stand, Mr. Green stands by the freezer, and the door slowly opens, and out falls her body with a knife in her back.
It's very Goonies.
Oh, so Goonies. Clearly, she's been murdered and stuffed in the freezer. This is where I didn't write down the full line. What was it? What's her face? Mrs. Scarlet makes a joke about the chef, and Colonel Mustard said, "This is no time for jokes." And Miss Scarlet replies, "That's my defense mechanism."
And I think later we find out that there's actually a secret passageway to that freezer. Yes. Or pantry, wherever she was.
Yes, there's a secret passage that connects the freezer to the study where Mr. Body was killed. So, interesting.
But secret passages are such an important part of the game clue. Oh, as well.
Yeah. I love how they incorporated that, too. That was really great. And then we have another joke where, because they're all starting to accuse each other, and they ask Mrs. White, "How many husbands have you had?" And she says, "Mine or other women's." It's very silly. But they move the chef to the study, and they find that Mr. Body's body is gone. He's no longer there. And also another joke that makes me laugh every time. Mrs. Peacock says that she needs to go to the restroom. And she asks the maid, "Is it down the hall?" And the maid is French. So she says, "Oui, oui, madame." And Mrs. Peacock replies, "No, I just need to powder my nose." It's stupid. The dumbest jokes ever.
Yeah, it's very dumb joke heavy. Yes. But in a good favorite. Way. I like a good dumb joke.
Me too. But she goes down the hall to the bathroom and opens the door, and Mr. Body's body falls on her.
Oh my goodness.
And his head is covered in blood. He clearly has a new injury. So was he dead initially?
Or rich?
So they all freak out, and Wadsworth decides to lock up all the weapons in the cupboard, and he says that he initially is like, "I'll keep the key on me," and they're like, "Well, what if you're the killer?" And so he decides that he's just going to throw the key into the yard so that no one can have access to it. But before he can, there's someone at the door. It's this motorist whose car has broke down, and he needs to use their phone.
Every time someone came to the door, I thought it was the singing telegram.
I always forget about her.
The only one I really remember.
It's just so short-lived when she does, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
But they take him into, I think it's the library, to use the phone, and they lock the door behind him, and Wadsworth goes to the front door and throws the key into the yard, and we see it go into the yard. And then this is where Colonel Mustard says that they have to use military tactics to figure out who it is, and they must split up and search the house. So thank they decide, goodness. Yeah. definitely a potential for more antics to ensue.
Simultaneous antics going on throughout the house.
Exactly. So they decide they were going to draw matches of different sizes, and whoever's matches match, that they will search together. And shortest matches will search the basement, and the longer they go, the further up the house they go.
Yeah, when that happened, I was like, oh, flashback. I definitely remember this part. I think the matchstick link thing really left an impression on me when I was young.
So they draw matches, and the pairs are Wadsworth and Mrs. White, Professor Plum and Mrs. Peacock, Miss Scarlet and Colonel Mustard, and Mr. Green and Yvette the Maid. And so they all go to
funny pairings because Yvette has got all the sexuality, well, I mean, yes. Besides the Scarlet, but Mr. Green is the least likely to be
right because he's the homosexual,
you know, moved by that. And then the Scarlet and Colonel Mustard, they already have a history together.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely pairings to make the most nonsense. So they all, you know, meet in the foyer, and then they all start to split up into their respective areas. But they're very, suspicious of each other. They're, not trying to turn their backs to each other, going through doors at the same time. It's very stupid. And so Mr. Green and the maid, Yvette, had the longest matches, so they go all the way up to the attic. Professor Plum and Mrs. Peacock had the shortest, so they go to the basement. Miss Scarlet and Colonel Mustard search the first floor where they are, and Wadsworth and Mrs. White search the second floor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they go in, they start searching around, they're very suspicious of each other, but then we see a gloved hand grabbing the blackmail evidence and tossing it into the fireplace. Dun, and then dun, dun. They go to open the cupboard and they're collecting all the weapons. How do they have the key?
Oh, no.
Who is
it? Isn't this the part where they have the exact same joke twice in a row of people trying to squeeze through passages at the same time? Yes. I was like, okay, not right one after the other.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Green and Yvette the maid are both trying to go up to the attic at the same time, and they're just squishing each other up the stairs. And same thing with Miss Scarlet and Colonel Mustard. They're so distrusting of each other. All right. So in the lounge, or the library, where the motorist with the broken down car is, he's on the phone, he's talking, he says that there's some weirdness going on here, but then we see a gloved hand person sneak in through a passage to the fireplace, passage.
Doesn't he say, my old boss is here?
Oh, does he? I totally missed him? That. I think so.
I think he's talking on the phone and he's like, and my old boss.
Yes, which is another clue.
Yeah.
But we see another secret passage to the fireplace. This gloved hand person, mysterious person, hits him in the head with the wrench, killing him. Very scary. but then we go to the greenhouse where Miss Scarlet and Colonel Mustard find the secret passage. And it leads to that lounge through the fireplace where they find the body of the motorist. They start screaming. Everyone rushes downstairs to them. And this is where Wadsworth finds out the key to open that area of the house is gone. It's missing from his pocket. And he tries to shoulder the door open, but is not strong enough. And then the maid somehow has the gun and tries to shoot the door open and misses a bunch of times and shoots the chandelier rope so we can see it slowly unraveling.
But when she actually tries to shoot it, like, she shoots it, the chandelier rope, because she's just kind of like, you know, remember exactly why, but when she goes to shoot it, I'm like, she's a crack shot. aiming.
Yeah, she shoots the door handle, like where the keyhole is to unlock the door. One of the bullets grazes Colonel Mustard, and he...
So funny that...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's so funny that that's like her go-to. Oh, of course, I'll just shoot the door open.
Yeah, in this chaos. And then Colonel Mustard is like, I've been shot. Yep, I've been shot. And it's like, the bullet grazed you. You're not even bleeding.
You're fine.
So then they open the door. And then this is where we see the chandelier start to get even thinner and thinner. And it looks like it's about to fall on Colonel Mustard, but he takes one step forward and it falls right behind him.
Oof, that would give me a heart attack. So scary.
Yes. But then they notice that she has the gun, and Yvette the maid, and she lets them know, well, the cupboard's open with all the weapons. So they rush back, and they see that, and then the doorbell rings again. Mm. Mr. Green goes to open it, and it's a police officer. He noticed the car was abandoned, and it was asking if the motorist who was driving it came to the house. Let's see. And they all start lying, saying, no, 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 except for Mr. Green, who is like, yep, he's here. Can't lie. So they let the cop in, and they're acting super suspicious, like very quickly shutting doors very loudly and just trying to act, you know, non-conspicuous. But he ends up wanting to use the phone, so they lock him in the study. And he answers the phone and says that it's J. Edgar Hoover. So, which is like so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, because this is actually taking place in the 30s or something?
Yeah, or, when he was the head of the FBI.
At the beginning, I think it said when it was taking place in some earlier era.
Yeah, but you know, probably the most famous head of the FBI.
Uh-huh.
So clearly, like, why is the FBI calling this house? Very weird.
Uh-huh.
But they let him out, and Mr. Green shows the cop around the mansion.
I like the way he explains that they're all on edge because the chandelier just fell.
Yeah.
That's why they're all acting so suspicious.
Yes. But Mr. Green says he'll show him around, but the cop wants to go into the study and he ends up kind of forcing his way in. But luckily, Mrs. White has positioned Mr. Body on the couch enough so that it looks like they're just making out on the couch very passionately. And Colonel Mustard has done the same with the cook, Mrs. Ho. So, you know, he just thinks that everyone's just making out. Maybe it's a sex party, but he's like, this is America. You know, you could do whatever you want.
We're fine. Yeah, the making out with corpses was definitely also a very image that was stuck in my head when I saw it. I was like, oh, yep. I remember this part.
Yes. And then in the study where the motorist is, he goes in and Miss Scarlet and Professor Plum are pretending to make out. And they have set the motorist up with a hat on with a bottle in his hand. And he looks like he's just passed out drunk.
Uh-huh.
And of course, they make the joke that he's dead drunk. But, you know, everything looks good. He's not suspicious anymore. And they lock him back up in the study. And they continue to search the house. And then this is where Miss Scarlet finds a new passageway in the freezer that leads to the study where Mr. Body was killed, behind a painting. So another one she found. And then we have the gloved, mysterious hand again pull the light switch for the entire house, and it goes dark, and everyone's panicking, everyone's screaming, everyone's running around. And then we see Yvette the maid go into a dark room, and it's she starts speaking with someone, but she no longer has a French accent. So very interesting.
Uh-huh.
Well, we can't see this person and we can't hear them. But then we see that they have the rope and they've wrapped it around her neck. They're killing her.
Killing her.
It's crazy. And then in the study, we see the cop is on the phone and we see another gloved hand press the, what would you call it? Like the hang up button, I guess. Uh-huh. Hangs up the phone and then strikes him in the back of the head with a pipe. So he's dead now.
I'm sure that there's a name for that that I used to know, but I haven't used one of those phones in so long I can't remember.
I can't. Like,
the cradle? Yeah. Maybe?
Receiver button? I don't know. But then the doorbell rings again, and this is where we have our infamous singing telegram woman. And she starts.
I am your singing telegram.
Yes. And then she's immediately shot. But we don't know by who. And then the lights come back on. Everyone returns to the foyer and they find that the maid Yvette is dead in the billiards room. And they sort of at this point are just so overwhelmed with so many dead bodies that they just barely react to it. They're just like, oh, great. Another one. And then they find the cop and the pipe by him and he's dead. And same reaction. And then they open the front door and they see that the telegram lady is dead. So three new bodies. But Wadsworth says he knows who did it and he's going, let's go to the study to explain it all.
And this takes the entire last 30 minutes of the movie.
Yes. Yes, because he is recounting the entire movie that we just saw already. Yeah. And he's playing sort of all the parts. Like, he's like Mr. Body on the floor, and he lays down on the floor. And he's doing all his parts.
Yeah, this is a real Tim Curry starring moment where he's going through and basically leading us through all the potential possibilities.
Exactly. But then, after all that explanation, find out that the cook and the maid were actually accomplices in the blackmail and were helping Mr. Body get the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Mrs. White reveals that the maid actually worked for her in the past. And Colonel Mustard also knows the maid because he was, you know, quote unquote, set up with her through Miss Scarlet's service. Scarlet.
Yes.
And then we actually find out that the motorist was actually invited to the house and knew Colonel Mustard because he was a driver for him in the war and knew Colonel Mustard's secret. What'd you say?
His old boss.
Exactly. And he knew Colonel Mustard's real secret was that, which was that he was a war profiteer.
Oh.
Very,
naughty, naughty.
Not good. And then we find out the cop was actually connected to Miss Scarlet. He was on her payroll to collect her, you know, to collect maybe some evidence and blackmail and all that kind of stuff. And then we find out the telegram singer was actually the patient of Professor Plum, who got his license revoked. So they were all accomplices, and whoever killed Mr. Body wanted them dead too.
Yeah, they were, I guess, all helping with the blackmailing.
Yes. So it's all connected. But then the doorbell rings, and I couldn't remember how to say this type of person, but it's like a door-to-door preacher. Like, they go to door and be like...
evangelist, I guess?
Yeah. Or... basically, yeah, they have, like, you know, have you accepted Jesus Christ into your life? But they're right. Like, get out of here. This is already hell. We're already there.
Who are you informing on?
Exactly. But after he leaves, Wadsworth reveals that the maid was actually the killer of Mr. Body and the cook, mm-hmm. and that she was acting under orders from the person who killed her. And then Wadsworth accuses Mrs. Scarlet. And he asks everyone to empty their pockets and their purses, and whoever has the gun is the killer, and Miss Scarlet has the gun. And she turns on them, and she says that her plan was to sell their secrets to the highest bidder. It's all about the money. I had
totally forgotten about Miss Scarlet being the first potential killer.
I know, me too. But just then, the doorbell rings, and while Miss Scarlet is subtracted, Wadsworth subdues her, takes the gun, and the police are here. And we find out that the door-to-door preacher guy is actually the chief of police. And then... there's this whole scene about, like, the bullet count and who has the correct bullet count, 21212 or 1112.
Right,
And there was actually one bullet left, so Miss Scarlet was right, and the gun goes off and shoots the rope on another chandelier that falls because they got it wrong, and then it fades to black. But it's not over yet, because the words, "That's how it could have happened," come on screen, and then, "How about this?"
So this is very, remember that Mansfield Park movie we watched last mm-hmm. year? And they're like, "It could have happened like this." But right. They have the whole ending scene. I don't know why. It just kind of makes me think of that.
Oh, yeah. It's so, I always forget about this. So I'm always like, "I can't believe Miss Scarlet was a killer." And then I'm like, "Oh, wait, duh. There's like 15 more minutes."
Right.
All right. So then we have a whole new reenactment of the murders. Wadsworth goes through the entire thing all over again, and then he accuses Mrs. Peacock of the murders. And then we find out that the dish that she had commented that was her favorite recipe was actually monkey brains, and everyone is sick. And then this is where we find out that the cook actually used to work for her.
Mm.
And so we do the whole check your purses and pockets again, and Mrs. Peacock has the gun this time. And then they... you know, start singing to her that she's a good, jolly good fellow as she starts backing out the room with her gun.
Yeah, I like the way they treat her completely differently when yes. she's the one.
They're like, she's, just let her go. So she goes at the door, but Wadsworth reveals that the police aren't coming because he works for the FBI. And outside, they storm Mrs. Peacock and arrest her. And then we fade out. But... we get a message again that says, "But here's what really happened." So, go through the entire murder thing again, and then accuses Mrs. White of murdering the maid, Mrs. Scarlet of murdering the cop. And Wadsworth confesses that he shot the singer, and reveals that he is actually Mr. Body. So many revelations.
And Mr. Body was his butler, right?
Yes, Mr. Body was actually his butler, so this was his plan all along.
Yeah, I think this is the one that if you really watch it, probably the clues are there.
Yes. Yeah, that looking back after that revelation, it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's aiming the gun at them. They feel like, you know, what are they going to do now? And then we find out Mr. Green pulls out a gun out of nowhere and shoots Wadsworth. And Wadsworth dies, and Mr. Green reveals he's actually an FBI agent, and he's not gay because he's going home to his wife.
Gonna go home and sleep with my wife.
And then freeze frame and fade to black. So stupid.
Oh, yeah, that movie is funny.
It's one of my favorites. I could watch it again right now.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those you could just watch several times because it's so short and mm-hmm. like there's stuff that you could catch the next time you watch it, you know, knowing the ending.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And all the jokes, like I feel like every time I watch it, there's like a new joke that's like, oh, this is actually the funniest joke, because there's just so many of them, you miss them.
Yeah. Flames on the side of my face.
Yes. I mean, that's like probably one of the most quotable lines. Yeah. It's just so good. I love it.
Do you have a favorite part?
Oh, gosh. Honestly, I think my favorite part is when they find the cook in the freezer, stabbed in the back, and there's the whole exchange of, you know, now is not a time for jokes, but it's my defense mechanism. And because she's just so like sure of herself, like, but it's my defense mechanism. And just, you know, that's a scene where there's just like joke, 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 joke. And
yeah.
It's just so funny. I'm just, yeah. I always laugh so much. What about you?
I really like watching Tim Curry run around and lead everybody room to room. This is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened.
Luckily, we get it 3 times.
Yeah. Well, I think at least the third time, they kind of like start halfway through.
Yeah. We start cutting some stuff.
Yeah. But it's just so fun to watch Tim Curry and be like, you're just like the driving force of this entire movie. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's so... That's what's so great about this cast, is that everyone is so essential to the movie, and I can't imagine one of them not being in it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not like your typical, you know, Saturday Night Live people who you see on all the, like, 80s movies. They're, like, kind of still really funny. I don't know. Maybe a lot of them were on Saturday Night Live. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's a really great cast without it being, like, the same people you see in every 80s comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, and like just like really great comedic actors, you know, especially Madeline Kahn. I just watched Young Frankenstein for the first time a couple years ago, and she is just the best in that too. Yeah, she's such an amazing, amazing actress. So talented.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was a fun excursion.
It was. I think it was a great way to kick off the Tim Curry side of our podcast.
Yeah, because we did so much Jane Austen, you know, because of Loveuary. And then we did Lost Highway, which was a big David Lynch. So I just wasn't really ready to get back into Jane Austen. So I think this was great. And now that we've kicked it off, we'll definitely have to do some more Tim Curry movies. I feel like so many of them I want to do at Halloween time. But we'll have to scatter them and do a little spooky all year round.
Yeah, he does have a Halloween vibe to most of his movies.
And he's got, well, I mean, like Rocky Horror and
It.
Legend. It. Oh my God, we have to do It.
You know, I've never watched the original It. So there's a couple Tim Curry movies that I've never watched that I'm excited to cover.
Now that one I've seen many times.
I mean, it's like quintessential 80s spookiness.
Yeah. Okay, but I think next what I want to do is a Whit Stillman movie. Ooh. Which I've had on our list for a long time, but it's on the Criterion Collection. It's based supposedly on Mansfield Park a little bit, but I've never seen it, and I'm very interested to watch it. It's called Metropolitan. And if nothing else, I know there's some Jane Austen discussion within the movie, so...
Perfect.
I think it'll be a good one. And, you know, be a good way to expand our horizons a little. Because Whit Stillman also did Love and Friendship.
Oh, right. Well, I'm sure I'll love this one just as much. I've heard so many good things about Metropolitan, so I'm excited.
Yeah, he's got a New York trilogy or something. And I don't know if any of the rest of them have anything to do with Jane Austen, but I've never seen any of them.
Well, that'll be fun. It'll be new to both of us.
Yes. So we could do that one next week.
Awesome. Yay. I'm excited.
Excuse Perfect.
Me. Well.
But that's it for today. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, same thing. I was going to say, if you love Clue just as much as we do, maybe you should, you know, send us in your favorite lines. What are your favorite jokes?
I was just going to say, send us what you quote all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. You can email us, managethemadness@gmail.com. DM us on Twitter at Manners Madness or on Instagram and Threads at Manners Madness Pod. Yes. Or you can leave a voicemail on our website at mannersandmadness.com.
Yes, and we hope that you will.
Yes, please.
And leave us a rating or review if you feel so inclined. We really appreciate that.
Yes, 5 stars, please.
Yes, 5-star reviews. That's what we're looking for.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess that's it for this week. Keep an eye out for Metropolitan.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Good night.